part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.
There we go, back from our rather brief community calendar today, but it's made Rich a happier person. That means we should all be happy. And if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, or 100.7 in the Willamette Valley, or 91.9 in the Columbia Gorge. It's community radio. It's December 26th, the day after Christmas, beginning of Hanukkah, the beginning of Kwanzaa, and I'm sure there's some other religious activities going out there we've forgotten, and no offense there. But hopefully, it's also beginning of some off time for folks. Hopefully some folks have taken some time off from all the craziness and gearing up for what's coming up for the new year. And in that vein, we've suggested for folks who'd like to participate in talk radio this morning that, for one, let's look back at what's happened this past year and what have been the high points and the low points from a progressive perspective here in Portland. What single thing happened during the course of the year? You're like, wow, how'd I live in Portland? It's a great progressive town. This wouldn't happen anywhere else. Or conversely, what happened that made you grab your head and say, oh, the pain behind my eyes. What is going on here? What were those people thinking? Why is this happening in a progressive community? And I'm sure there'll be a lot of examples one can draw on both sides of that line. And let's hear from you about those, what you think. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Downside for me, I'm trying to think. Well, actually, I'd like to say there's been a lot of positive points going on this year in Portland. I think, you know, a lot of change has been happening. We've seen the biodiesel thing kind of kick into gear. Some efforts behind talking earlier about green buildings. Of course, we've got another building convergence coming up in 2006, and a lot of interest going on in green building. Clearly, you know, the city could do more. We've had the city, you know, throw down the gauntlet to the EPA, which is clearly the EPA is obviously working, you know, under the weird science of George Bush's administration and wanting to develop rules on water quality that work really well for the transnational corporations involved in the business of water, but does very little for the citizens who want to enjoy what's one of the cleanest water supplies in the country. So those, I think, have been some memorable moments. We also have, obviously, some bad moments we can think about. There's the ever-increasing cost of our tramway to the top of the hill, which has somewhere around tripled in cost. I believe it's now right around $47 million. It had originally been bid at $15 million. And this thing hasn't even gotten off the... They haven't got the wires strung yet, and it's already seen these cost overruns like crazy. With no end, and with growing questions about just how well something like this can really serve the supposed need there is there. There's also the whole South Waterfront District issue. Anybody who's driven by that stretch of property south of the Markham Bridge, you can tell that the city is definitely changing. It's going to look a lot different in the next few years with all those high rises along there. But what are we going to end up with? Are we going to end up with the same sort of semi-stagnant mix of buildings with mixed, you know, mixed residential commercial use where you have, you know, a few chains located in the first floor that change tenants every year or so? The Subway sandwich place moves out and some other chain moves in. Is that what we're going to be looking at? And with, you know, low vacancy rates, no one seems to be talking about biotech anymore, even though that was the rationale for embarking on the whole South Waterfront District. We were going to be a biotech giant. It was a questionable project from that perspective from the get-go, but it seems now that the people who were promoters of this have since sort of quieted down on that whole biotech thing. Now, maybe they've already made their money on the development that's taking place, and they don't really care what happens. But it seems to me that there should be some stronger queries coming out of city council about this whole thing rather than just cheering it on. But we'll see. What do you think? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Let us know what you think about some of those projects or what were some of the other rough parts of the road we hit over the last year. There's certainly been our share of potholes, including quite literally potholes, as you can tell. Our city streets are deteriorating at a fairly rapid rate. But what do you think? Give us a call, because this is, after all, talk radio, and shouldn't just be a monologue. I'm not Lars Larson. I don't enjoy just the sound of my voice. I'd like to talk to people. It's lonely here, so give us a call. But seriously, it's been an interesting place to be this last year. And a lot of interesting things going on. Ah, we have a caller. Good. Let's bring that caller on. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I have a question for you about something that, as far as I know, has not been done in this past year and should have been. You know when they closed down the post office in the Pioneer Courthouse?
Yeah.
I think that was a damn dumb thing to do. That's one of the few things I've been disappointed with Representative Wu about,
mm-hmm.
was approving that. And at that time they were saying, well, you know, we're going to put in some other post office closer to downtown. There's that one way over on, Gleason?
Yeah.
And then there's the other one that's over there by PSU. They're both kind of a long walk if you're right in the center of downtown, and that was such a convenient and very popular and much-used post office. Have they ever put in anything?
Not that I'm aware of.
That was all just a bunch of baloney that they were giving us, that they were going to do something to relieve that, my guess at that time is that they never really intended to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone out there knows and does know about the replacement post office, give us a call. But as far as I'm aware, they have not provided that replacement that they promised. Now, the judges got their underground parking and their little driveway, and we mm-hmm. got left holding the bag.
We got left holding the bag, and the whole thing was a harebrained scheme to begin with, because the federal judges need offices over there by the Gus Solomon Courthouse, where there is a big parking building. They'll not just rent permanent parking spaces for them and find that there are plenty of office buildings there. Surely they could get a floor and convert that for the judges in a block of the Gus Solomon Courthouse if they really wanted to do that, and leave us with that really much-used and very popular post office downtown.
Well, that sounds like a really reasonable proposal, that you would consolidate them, you know, physically consolidate them in near the courts. But my guess is that that's an argument that did not hold up against judges liking their office space there, which is nicely located for things other than just, you know, going to try cases. It's a good location downtown for shopping, and I'm sure they're probably big, old, cushy offices as well. So
yeah, that's right. And they go in there after hours, you know, and leave packages, and who knows. Yeah, that's right. okay, well, if anybody knows anything more about that alleged post office that they're going to put in downtown, I guess we can hear from them. I don't think there is one.
I don't think there is either. So, but let's put a watch out there, folks. Let's know about that missing post office. Thanks a lot, caller.
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go. You know, I'd forgotten about that, the little private underground parking. But that kind of goes back to some of my earlier grousing that, you know, we have officials who, yes, I understand that when people are in certain jobs, there are certain higher risks involved, but, you know, it's like when people keep repeating that constantly without actually going back and checking the facts, you end up with it becoming this sort of mantra that doesn't necessarily have any truth to it, but it becomes very persuasive. For example, of course, is I think the one you hear most is that, you know, the police, it's a dangerous job being a police officer. And yes, it is a dangerous job being a police officer, but there are many other jobs that are more dangerous. A logger, for example, is far more dangerous. More loggers have lost body parts or have died doing their job than police officers do. In fact, in one list I saw that was compiled by a government agency, bakers were higher up on the list than police for painting injuries and deaths, you know, working in these large industrial bakeries, that was a much more dangerous job, even though we don't seem to get the endless number of TV shows about bakers and the dangerous lives they lead and the women they love. But, you know, maybe we could pitch that to Hollywood and they go for it. Who knows? Anyway, let's hear from you out there. Let's hear what you think. What's been the high and the low point this year in Portland? What would you like to see on the agenda for the year? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. You don't want to talk about that? Give us a call and talk about something else. Let us know what you got for the holiday. Just let us know you're okay, that you're not buried under tons of wrapping paper. But give us a call. This is Talk Radio, and we should be talking. And we do have a caller. Let's bring that next caller in on the line. Good morning, caller. Good morning. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, good. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good.
I'd like to wish you a Happy New Year.
Well, thank you.
And everyone who's listening. The police should be on their feet and not in squad cars. That doesn't mean get rid of all the squad cars. It should be a squad car force and a walking police force.
Mm-hmm.
And they should rotate their duties. And they should be educated as to what the true purpose of their presence is within the city.
Good points.
I agree with the gentleman about the a more central post office and the water treatment situation. There should be a think tank formed. The citizens should take responsibility for it, radio stations being the leading force. A think tank that would put together a panel composed of people who are in contact with or part of the very best minds that have to do with such things, how to purify water and maintain its quality using natural means, improving upon whatever natural means Portland is using for this purpose. First and foremost, as it may sound fickle, but the community calendar is not given proper consideration. It's never delivered properly. The reading is...
Wait a minute. Our community calendar you're talking about?
Yeah, Cable community calendar. Yeah. It's a rapid-fire delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Often the pronunciation is not correct. It seems like... The most inexperienced people in the station are responsible for its presentation. I think that really could be improved. And I've heard several people, which I think can be multiplied by many, complain of this. You know, they don't give enough time for people to record what they're saying. And then you have to get on the telephone and call the station and sometimes get derailed by the, you know, the telephone system and the inexperienced office system and stuff like that. I don't mean to be so critical of the station, but it's not a negative criticism.
No, you're offering constructive criticism, and, you know, and you obviously recognize the challenges of volunteer run that, you know, it's, not that volunteers can't perform just as well as the professionals can, but the dynamics are always different in a volunteer run situation, and these are people who are doing things on top of their normal job, so.
Exactly. All the more reason why we should put more, attention on changing the situation so that it can be as optimum as possible, and that's not what it is now. It just seems that we just say, well, you know, volunteer, and this is just the community calendar, so just run it off real fast. And
I will say also, to speak on their behalf, that oftentimes they're trying to cover a lot of material, and they only have a certain block of time.
Maybe they should be given more time.
Well, I was going to say, I think maybe that's really what the question is the need to maybe go back and think, do we need to expand the community calendar? You know, it may cut into the regular programming a bit, but that's an important resource.
Well, it's a community radio station.
Right.
That's the word, community.
Right.
And the community calendar is being delivered like it's, you know.
It sounds like you're at an auction, right? The guy just
right.
Ripping those numbers off.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, it happens to all of us. I sometimes get into hyper mode, sometimes trying to get it all squeezed in before the end of the show. And you can realize afterwards that, boy, probably no one understood what I was saying at that point. So
it
happens. But I think, again, those are all very constructive criticisms, and we'll be glad to pass them on to our folks who work with the volunteers.
And I think the walking police.
That's a really big one. I think it's just there can't be any real reform until we, as you say, get the cars and onto the streets, walking and getting to know the neighborhoods.
Yeah, and not only that, but less of them armed.
Yeah.
There can be an armed force that's prepared to deal with certain situations. The technology now, electronic, communications technology allows for a big improvement in that area. I mean, they've got a policeman can be walking with a high-tech radio and video camera situation on his body.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be a commander just for that department, so that when the policeman walks around, the police department sees what he sees, and he should be trained in conflict resolution
mm-hmm.
and how to go in and talk to people so as to avoid lots of negative situations.
And I would say, too, that I think that they need to be integrated in as part of really a community solution team, that it shouldn't just be cops. It should be, you know, people who are trained in dealing with folks with alcohol and drug problems, people who are trained to deal with psychiatric problems, social workers who are, you know, accustomed or dealing with issues of poverty and what have you. I mean, it really should be something much more multifaceted than we go in, we find the bad guy, and that's
clearly
it. You know, we got to get away from that cowboy and Indian attitude that most cops have. Because you talk to an awful lot of cops, what do you like about the job? I like putting the bad guys away.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, yeah, okay, I agree. That's an important role of putting the bad guys away. But in today's society, you know, more complex than that.
You find out more than one time during the year that many of them are the bad guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to attack the bad guys who are in the police force, because there are bad guys in every workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But this attitude, as you just mentioned, needs to be changed. Policemen should be able to go to a situation with no arms at all. And if they encounter someone with arms, when they get ready to go out and suppress the general public, they have the very most high-tech material possible. There are bulletproof shields,
Mm-hmm.
There are nets that you use to trap lions with, and all kinds of things that they could resort to before pulling out their pistol and shooting someone,
Well,
and if it's necessary to pull out your pistol and shoot someone, the central force knows exactly what the situation is before it escalates. They're looking at it on the camera. They're listening at it over the policeman's high-tech walkie-talkie, and the backup forces are right there behind him. And if people in this community knew that, they would be reluctant to seek to escalate a confrontation between them and the policeman, who may even be unarmed,
Mm-hmm.
Should have unarmed police and armed police, and they should be very selectively used.
Well, I think that's an excellent idea. I don't know. I don't think Chief Foxworth is a guy who's going to be willing to try something like that. I think he's been pretty disappointing myself.
Chief Foxworth is not the king. Not only that, he's an Uncle Tom lackey. And I say that in the best of spirits, I'm new to Portland, but I've observed that.
He's been on the inside, and he identifies with that inside group, and he's not going to have unity. It's really, I think, kind of sad, because I think when he came in and the old mayor stepped down, the new mayor came in, there was this opportunity that between the two of them, they could have probably put forward some really bold initiatives. Because here you had two people, Foxworth was at least new to being chief, and not quite as to the others. And Potter was a, you know, former chief and had, you know, sort of this reform attitude. So we really had a wonderful opportunity there, and I feel like they really blew it. You know, we could have gone in and seen them really do some real restructuring along some of the lines you've been talking about and other things they could have been doing. What do we get instead? They're arming everybody with tasers now, even though a lot of police departments are looking at giving tasers a second look because of the concerns it has about, you know, really being more dangerous of a weapon than it claims to be.
Well, I don't want to start the year off taking too much time on the air.
Well, thanks a lot for all your comments, and you have a good new year now. And for you all just tuning in, I'm Dave Mazza doing talk radio this morning while the regular hosts are sitting at home enjoying their legal Christmas holiday. And I'm not begrudging them of that, but you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM or 91.9 in the Columbia Gorge or 100.7 in the Willamette Valley. And we're doing talk radio. We're talking about, oh, a whole bunch of things, but sort of under the general banner of what were the high points and low points for this past year for the city. We know nationally what the low points were. And what would we like to be rolling into 2006? What sort of agenda is Progressive swinging into 2006 with? You know, we just had a gentleman on who had suggestions regarding police reform and other ideas. And, you know, let's hear from you all about what you think about that, because we do need some more direction here, I think. I don't think, as much as I admire some of the folks on our council and who have done some good stuff, I mean, Sam Adams has been a little dynamo out there just working hard on a variety of issues. And, you know, even some of the folks that we tended in the past to be critical of have done, you know, taken some good steps. But we're still not seeing it come together, I think, the way it should. We need, you know, we're not seeing the transparency in government that we need. We're not seeing the big items, the big change in course. And, okay, Portland's like a ship. It takes a long time. Still, we're not seeing that wheel turn enough. We're still seeing too much money being spent on urban development that's strictly for the upper class. We're seeing too much of erosion of services for the poor and the disabled and the variety of challenges that many of us fortunately don't have to deal with. We're not seeing that sort of thing happening, you know. Homelessness is still being treated like something you can eradicate as opposed to it being, you know, as opposed to it being something that needs to be addressed with a whole different manner. And we should be looking at more dignity villages and less trying to do street sweeps. But I think we might have another caller coming on the line, so why don't we see what somebody out there has to say about the issue. We have a call. Well, I'm sorry. I thought we had a caller on the line, but Rich is shaking his head at me no. So we'll just move on. But give us a call out there, 503-231-8187 on this same day, patron bricklayers, and also the patron saint of Hungary, and apparently celebrated in Austria, Ireland, Italy, Liechtenstein, San Marino, and Great Britain. For those who are really into St. Stephen's, those are the hot spots to go to get into the St. Stephen's festivities. As well as, you know, obviously today's beginning of Hanukkah and our morning after and Christmas when we realize all the excesses we've been through. So we're talking today about a whole bunch of different things, about the city, what's going on, what's working, what's not. Some of the issues we've talked about a little bit are police, water, the parking lot for judges, and just the general sort of those barriers that get put up that run contrary, I think, to most of us who are populist or democratic at heart, of, you know, giving little privileges to our elected officials, our appointed officials, so that they get their own little special places and they don't have to mingle with the masses, and they get more isolated and more contemptuous of everyday people. And I think that's a real dangerous thing. And I think that, you know, if you take a job and there's going to be some risk to it, you know, well, that's the way it is. If I work in an auto factory, I run the risk of, you know, dismount a machine, or if I'm a baker, which we know is one of the more dangerous businesses, as we were talking earlier, I run the risk of, you know, who knows, falling in a vat of dough, or a logger. There are all sorts of jobs out there that everyday people do, and I think that we need to stop putting some of our people up on these pedestals, because it's mostly moneyed white guys that are, seem to be in this position that want all these special perks of being pregnant. So let's knock that off. Let's make it all more an equal playing field. Let's make open up the doors of government. Let's make our spaces more people out there, having people really have a sense of ownership there. And let's let our citizens and the city employees and the elected officials all be kind of mingled together. If you want to have a vibrant civic life, you can't do it hiding the government behind metal detectors and various other things. You know, earlier this year, I got a thing in the mail about from Chief Potter. He was trying to recruit people for the it was the ordinance review. And first thing that caught my attention was you had to have a criminal background check. And in talking to other people, you know, doing a little poking around, this seems to be like a standard issue. General background check, criminal background check, on almost anything you want to do if you want to volunteer for the city, if you want to be involved in, you know, police reform or any or stuff that's not even involved in the police. It's a criminal background check. So, you know, I wrote to Potter saying, you know, this is the wrong way to go. I don't see the connection. If I get, you know, if someone got busted for pot 3 years ago, what does that have to do with them not being able to participate, not having a valid voice to put in the government? And it's those little things sometimes that can have, you know, a lot of, you know, bear a lot of bad fruit. I think, you know, if you just allow those little types of barriers to put up, it puts people off. People who should be heard aren't necessarily going to get involved. It's not a big thing, but it helps. Well, I think we have a caller on the line, so let's go with the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Hi, very good morning.
Good.
I just wanted to put a nod towards the Multnomah County iTax that we're in our just our third year. Well, I filed, as I should, but I did not send a payment. I wasn't able to. But I went ahead and made an arrangement with the folks over there today, and along with my first payment, which was, you know, the partial, along with a few to toss in, I sent a poem. Can I share that with you?
Sure.
Well, I ain't opposed to county tax. I've been here four generations, but now the sheriff's after me to gather salutations. I claimed bankruptcy just last year, got child support too, and I intend to pay my share, but rent and more is due. We'll pay some now and more next month, the best that I can do, and that'll settle up Multnomah County blue.
Well, I like that.
Well, I thought so too. But I, you know, not that I voted for it, but you know, you got to step up and, you know, to the plate when you need to pay up. And I decided to not have the man in green come knocking at my door over the holidays. But they were real cordial down there, and I think, well, I hope they get a chuckle out of my poem, and I'll take my note off the air. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that poetic response here, and you know, the iTax. That's going to be a tough one this year. I think, you know, this is our third year. It runs through. Then it comes back up for consideration. And I'm not sure how few folks are feeling about that. I mean, I think a lot of people who normally are, like the gentleman who just called, you know, it's not easy for them to pay for that. But they're willing to take that bite. I don't know how many other folks are feeling that way. So let's hear from you all about there, what you think about that. 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, let's bring on our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Well, hi, Mr. Mazda. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Oh, another day in paradise, sir.
There we go.
Okay. my rant today is about, is about this whole PGE, Enron, take the taxes and put it somewhere else thing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Enron PGE over the past 10 years have stolen at least $600 million from us. They've stolen another $7 million from Multnomah County. Multnomah County cries the blues that they don't have any money, right? And they and they send me the weepy letter when they want me to pay my taxes early. Yet, Ms. Lynn seems to have no trouble letting PGE take a walk.
Yeah, and for clarification for listeners, you're referring to the fact that PGE collects collects money for taxes,
right?
But does not has not paid those taxes,
right?
Right.
Okay.
Just folks who may not have been aware of that.
Yeah. Okay. It is very lovely that the state lets the public utilities act as the tax man, but when the tax man decides to put the money in his own pocket instead of having some kind of fiduciary responsibility to the citizens who live here, I think that's a felony.
Well, isn't this one of those times we should be pointing out that corporations demand to be treated like people?
Which
on to saying when it involves their financial, to their financial advantage,
mm-hmm.
It seems to me we should be pointing that out now. And if, corporations are people and they don't pay their taxes, they should be taking a trip somewhere.
Well, yes. What is their responsibility? Do they have a fiduciary responsibility to the public that they serve? Or are we just simply a cash cow that they could treat any way that they want? And the Public Utility Commission, the watchdog agency that's supposed to protect our interests, obviously doesn't protect our interests.
No.
Obviously protects the interests of the utility. All right? And being that the Public Utility Commission is an appointed agency by the governor, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't the governor have a responsibility to us?
Well, I guess they feel they have a responsibility to that corporate person who is donating much larger amounts to the campaign funds than we are.
Well, sir, yes, sir. Anyway, I would like my brothers and sisters to call the Public Utility Commission. Their phone number is 1-800-522-2404. And I really think that our brothers and sisters need to express their revulsion at what's going on, and I really think that that our brothers and sisters need to hold these bunch of bureaucrats responsible for their actions. These people are not watchdogs; they're lapdogs.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very, very much. Have a happy New Year.
You too.
And thank you for letting me vent.
Oh, you're welcome.
Right. Bye bye.
We couldn't vent in this world; we'd all be in trouble. Well, if you're just tuning in, I'm Dave Mazza, doing talk radio this morning, filling in for Celeste and Cecil. And you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, community radio, or 91.9 in the Columbia Gorge, 107 in the Willamette Valley. And give us a call. We're talking about a variety of things here, 503-231-8187. And I see that we have another call on the line. Good morning, caller.
Hello, Dave.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. You're doing a fine job filling in.
Well, thank you much.
Well, now, you were a candidate for the Multnomah County People's Utility District, weren't you?
A brief foray into the world of political candidacy. Yes.
But nonetheless, you were.
I was, yes.
Yeah, and so was I, and so were about another 10 people. And with our thing of time, that was November 03. Doesn't it seem like we had a little more than maybe the mass of folks out there really knew about?
Well, I always am cautious to say I have more wisdom than the mass of folks out there. So, but we did seem to be catching on a little quicker on this particular subject, yeah.
Now, the caller before that got me to call, he mentioned the Multnomah County ITAX, mm-hmm. or at least a couple folks did. Ironically, the recent article came out in the Big O about the $7 million or so that PGE has collected in the ITAX from Multnomah County, but hasn't paid the county. The county has a right under law to audit anyone who pays or doesn't pay the ITAX. And the county commissioners have failed to order an audit of PGE. Why do you think that is?
Well, as I said before, I'm thinking it might have to do with, how much money gets poured into their campaign coffers myself. But, you know, PGE's a big gorilla in the campaign world.
Well, I just wanted to make that point. Folks, everyone has a county commissioner, and you need to call your county commissioner and ask him to do an audit of PGE, and for that matter, do it for Pacific Core and Northwest Natural Gas or other utilities.
Right.
Now, the other gentleman also mentioned the Public Utility Commission. I agree, they are a lapdog, not a watchdog. But they're not bureaucrats. They're appointees. And I believe many of them, if not all, have been appointed by Governor Ted Kulongowski, a Democrat. And so they work at his pleasure. And if they are not working at our pleasure, then we need to go to the governor and tell him to get people for us, not for the utilities. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. I, you know, just trying to figure out what the pleasure of Ted Kulongowski is sort of a...
I don't know either. I get the impression that Ted Kulongowski is like Republican light, except when he needs to be a Democrat just to kind of shore up his base.
Yeah, I think he's definitely one of those guys who's professional. And yeah, he sort of wiggles around in that center area to keep himself... Now, of course, right now is a good time, though, for folks to be calling and putting pressure on him. He's, you know, clearly wanting to run again. He's announced he's, you know, he wants a second term, and there's still, you know, some pressure out there and some you know, facts out there that could affect his running. So.
Right. We got Pete Sorensen down in Eugene.
Right.
He seems like a good guy, very progressive agenda. He's also for public power.
Yeah.
And that certainly enamors me with him. One other thing, the city of Portland, bringing it back. You know, you talk about city council, potential for change, Potter coming in. He's quite surprising. Has a lot of potential. I don't know if he's lived up to it yet. And one thing that for me is the bar, and I live outside of Portland, but he can affect what happens to my citizens out here, is to take over PGE. That still is possible. What do you have a position? Has your paper taken a position on that?
Well, we've always been in favor of, you know, the city doing the condemnation thing and just doing it, you know, moving in and exercising its power. But, and I think that still should be what we should all be pushing for. I mean, that's the ideal thing. Well, the ideal thing would have been, of course,
PUD.
A PUD. But this is the next idea, the next best thing for us, I think, is at this point. Because my guess would be that if the city does take over, they're gonna hire a special management team to run it rather than something more populist.
Yeah, they've stated that, and they also, you know, appoint a board of people. There's 41 resumes that they already have possession of people both liberal and conservative that want to be on a board. Do you think this concept of them going for the rate reduction using an ancient law that they dusted off the books, is this, or is that merely just a way of continuing to agitate towards an eventual condemnation? What do you think?
Geez, you know, I hate to sort of tip their hand, but I don't think they're serious about it as a goal in itself. I think it's definitely a case of, I think there's still enough interest in the council for condemnation that that's probably just one of the tactics they're using to move, you know, position themselves that way. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Well, let me close with this, and I appreciate your time. I hope you're right. Eric Sten is openly for condemnation, and same with Commissioner Leonard, who, you know, there seems to be the good cop, bad cop plan, and he reaffirmed that on a competing station recently. So we really have just need of one more vote. I mean, hopefully everybody would vote. We certainly think that maybe Salzman's not going to vote for it, but maybe 4 out of 5 on the council. But, you know, Adams, nowhere to be found. His staff, whom we met with, if you go to cheappower.org, if folks want to read up on this, the Oregon Public Power Coalition, his staff, frankly, didn't know even what public power was. I mean, they were, you know, unfortunately very ignorant. And then we had with Mayor Potter's staff, until recently, his staff person assigned to public power, she for Portland General Electric, and actively campaigned against the Columbia River People's Utility District to annex of Clatskanie and St. Helens. So she's now moved to the PDC, thank goodness, but she was the gatekeeper on the mayor's policy when it came to public power. So I hope that signals a change, but we need to get only one more vote on city council to do something historic that will really affect all of us, and talk about the ITACs in closing. If we all save 10% on our electricity bill, then we can afford things like the ITACs.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah. Thanks a lot for bringing all that out.
Take care.
You too now. And for folks just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, and this is Talk Radio. And let's move on to our next caller.
Hi, Dave. Hey, this is a great program this morning. This is Liz calling.
Oh, hi, Liz. How you doing?
We're talking about getting the influence of money out of politics. We've got two initiatives on the street that people might want to get behind. These would ban corporate contributions to candidates. 45 other states have limits on corporate contributions, and Oregon is one of a small handful of states with no limits whatsoever.
But isn't that impinging on the corporation's right to freedom of speech?
Well, that's if you consider them to be persons, which we don't. We want government by, for, and of the people, not the corporate interests. If you spend any time down in Salem, you'll see the corporate interest get squashed. I'm sorry, the public interest gets squashed again and again and again. I know we had some critical issues down during the recent session. We did finally arrive at a state fossil, and I'm really glad that the state legislature was able to deal with this issue. But we do have some more important issues that they didn't touch in on, like budget issues and tax reform, getting a handle on corporate influence over our elections. So I wanted to mention our fairelections.net. We're about halfway through our signature gathering.
And for folks who may not have, you know, picked up on this campaign, just briefly, what will it do if this initiative gets passed?
This puts the electoral process for candidates back in the hands of small donors. Today it's in the hands of large donors. In fact, in the last budgetary go-round, they even considered eliminating the $50 political tax credit that Oregonians have today in the name of balancing the budget. So, I mean, basically what our legislatures have told us today, our incumbents, is we don't want those small donations.
Right.
We want big donations.
Well, it's just, you know, you don't have to cash so many, deposit so many
checks.
Right,
it's so messy and it takes so much time. It's like, you know, today, the fact of the matter is, whoever gathers the most money, whoever is the most efficient fundraiser, wins.
Right. That's actually what our races are all about.
So, you know, we have, to borrow a book title from Greg Palast, we have the best democracy money can buy.
It's a kind of a sad thing of what, when you have your system based that way, what you end up with, isn't it?
It is. It's really frightening. If you're down in Salem, well, during the Senate Bill 1008, which was the Oregon Community Power, you saw the lobbyists from the utility lined up across the back of the room. And this is who, unfortunately, most Oregonians aren't able to go down on a weekday and testify before their Senate committee hearing on business and economic development. I was able to go down, and it's just scary the influence that these lobbyists have.
Well, and they're there constantly.
Yes,
that's
day
the
and
thing.
Night.
From the moment the legislator arrives anywhere near the Capitol building, they're there. So.
Right. Senate Bill 1008 was the attempt by our state legislature to form a regionally owned electric utility. And it got tossed around back and forth and finally passed both houses of both houses, Senate and the House. And only to be vetoed by
our man.
Yeah.
The K-man.
Yeah.
The mystery man. What
right.
is he about?
Right. Fairelections.net.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Keep up the good work, Liz. And, yeah, we've had some interesting comments there. And definitely to be looking at that initiative and getting involved, because as Liz just said, what we're getting with the money, the democracy we're buying right now, we're not doing a very good job. It's like we're shopping at Walmart or something. Anyhow, let's move on to our next caller. I think we have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
Hello. We might need to look at the fact we already have a public utility owned by the city, the Water Bureau.
And good example.
One of the things that seems to be coming up is the Water Bureau needs a lot of money to fix up the Bull Run, the pipes.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened, apparently, somehow the city is alienated, or I don't know the reasons. We cannot get any of the outlying areas in the city to go with us to have any kind of an area-wide public utility for water. I don't know the reasons. But Mr. Stent was involved several years ago, and the idea was first broached, you know, spending a couple hundred million to upgrade the system, and we needed to get outlines outside of Portland to help the whole thing. And it's all disappeared in I don't know where.
Well,
I never hear anything about upgrades to the Bull Run anymore. That's gone. Although it's probably another couple hundred million that we'll be paying. We might not pay for paving the reservoir, but we're going to have to pay to upgrade Bull Run. I don't know, but I believe that somebody will have to face that one.
Well, I think what we're running into there is a little power politics going on. Now, Eric had at one point been a proponent of regionalizing our water system, and that drew a lot of criticism from progressive circles saying, you know, what you're talking about.
Why were they objecting to this?
Well, because what you're going, you'd be taking a water system that currently people have control over by through the city council. We have some democratic control, and that water system would then be put into the hands of a board made up of appointed individuals representing the various water districts that were involved in the region. So it would end up being, you know, it would no longer be a kind of a popular control there. There'd be no leverage there. This board would kind of be able to do what it wants. Now, you know, presumably we would hope that Portland would be looking out for our interests. But anyway, that idea kind of died as a result. There were a lot of people just saying it's not necessary to do that. Now, since then, of course, these outer jurisdictions, these other water districts like Wolf Creek and Tualatin Valley, and well, there's several of them out there. You know, they've been kind of trying to play hardball with Portland since then. Portland is the head water owner who's trying to, you know, kind of gouge them. Some of them have pulled out of the regional group consortium that exists. Some of them are looking for other sources. There's a big push in some of the areas for, you know, treating the Willamette River water.
Yeah, the Oregonian had that. Apparently that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's happening that these people are coming out from under, they say, the domination of Portland.
Yeah.
So
they really don't see any interest in helping Portland with its expenses.
Well, then we have to be prepared to pay for the whole brunt of everything. Now,
well, or we just...
I don't know if we can.
We still sell water to these folks.
Pardon me?
I said we sell water to these folks.
But not anymore. They're going to try to get away from it.
Well, they're going to try. I mean, the fact of the matter remains that none of them are going to be able to totally get off of the Bull Run water. I mean, even if that plant gets up and running, that's going to be treating the Willamette River water, that plant was jammed in there over the protests of the people who live in that area. They, in fact, managed to get that plant built by finding a little loophole in the law. That prior to them actually breaking ground on that plant, there had been an initiative passed by the residents of, was it Wilsonville, saying they don't want a water treatment plant. They want to get water from Bull Run or other sources. They don't want to drink Willamette River water. And the jurisdiction sort of found a legal loophole to go ahead and start construction anyway, because they're in with this large corporation that privatizes water systems and does this sort of thing. So there's a lot going on out there politically out in the suburbs. The fact is, though, they're growing at a rate where they cannot get by without purchasing Bull Run water, and, you know, we should just be selling it to them, and we should be in the cost of upgrading our system and making them pay their share of that cost. I think it's the way we do it. The city of Portland shouldn't take that on solely. And to me, I'm much more comfortable with Bull Run under the control of City Council than having it go to some large, vague board out there which may or may not have our interests.
Well, I think, it's an interest of democratic control for the, like, Gresham. For the same, every other jurisdiction has the same issue of democratic control that we do. And if we can't get along with these other jurisdictions, I mean, what does that say?
the whole
democratic process is broken down.
Well, possibly so. But, I mean, you know, I think we also have to look at the dynamics in those jurisdictions, and they vary from district to district. Some of them may be very much like Portland is. Some of them definitely are not. Some of them are very dominated by corporations that do not have our interests at heart. What they have is their interest in long-term goal is to privatize the water system. The folks who built the water plant, the water treatment plant out there to treat the Willamette River water, it's a French company. They're the number one privatizers of water systems in the world. They've privatized vast systems in Asia and in Africa and in Europe, and of course left, you know, taken oftentimes systems that were public systems that worked quite well and delivered, you know, good water for a low price, and left these people with just the opposite, something that's very high priced. Because what they do is they create a privatized system and then they sell the water elsewhere. So, you know, there's a lot going out there. It's gotten quite complex politically, and personally for me, like I say, I think it's just fine that we're keeping a hold on that water supply. After all, it was given to the people of Portland, and
I wish them more active on this. I get the feeling, I don't know what priority they have. they're more interested in a damn streetcar and getting a light rail than they are in having our water. And then the other one is, have you followed what's going on with PacifiCorp? We're right back in the same thing as Enron, the multi-state utility wants to get control of PacifiCorp.
Mm-hmm.
So the newspaper had something about the PUC and various unnamed private entities such as environmental groups and so forth, consumer groups, unnamed who they were,
mm-hmm.
They're all getting involved in some kind of a procedure and apparently have agreed on something which you can't understand by reading it in the paper, what this utility has agreed to.
Yeah.
And where's the city council on this? Any accountability in a procedure that's going on at this moment to, you know, we're not talking about the future. This is happening right now, and there is no obvious control over what this is going on, or the public isn't finding out about it. It's terrible.
We got to get out there and start calling your city council.
Well, okay.
Well, I appreciate your
a lot,
raising
the
those
democratic
issues.
The democratic process is in big trouble because of all these complicated things that we have to get hold of.
Yeah, well, if we could get the money out of it, make it a lot easier, that's for sure.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your comments. And for folks just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, filling in for Cecil and Celeste this morning. Give us a call. We're talking about high points, low points in the city of Portland this last year, or what we'd like to see on a progressive agenda for 2006. And you can do that by 231-8187. We've still got about 15 minutes or so left of the show, so lots of time for calls. Let's bring on the next caller.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Dave, on the thing on voter reform or election reform,
mm-hmm.
The last one was thrown out on the basis of the MATA decision. And not on the, money is free speech. Even though Oregon does have real strong free speech protections in our Oregon state constitution, about 9 or 10 years ago, there was a good campaign finance reform initiative did pass, but they had tried to address two parts of the Constitution. It was thrown out because it addressed two parts of the Constitution. It wasn't because the reason I bring this up is I've heard other hosts on cable say, well, money is free speech in Oregon. And yes, we do have real strong free speech equal protections here, but that's not why.
You know, actually, I wasn't. I was just throwing that out as just a generic thing that, you know, corporations are always saying. So,
but
it could have been confusing. I agree.
And I'm glad you touched on that point about the privatization of the Wilsonville's water. And I think that, you know, one of the main reasons that people in Portland are against regionalization is that many of the outlying communities, unfortunately, have had a penny-wise, pound-foolish attitude about public infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't wanted to spend money, and they haven't planned as Portland does. And, you know, 30 years ago, there was this land, a lot of us thought we would move out to the country and work to build a new society. Well, when you go to build yourself a house out in the country, you figure out real quick that, well, one of the main things that determine where you're going to put your house is where you're going to get your water from.
Yep.
And we don't realize how basic that is. And my thing on the water regionalization is, why would we want to go into business with another community that could not figure out that the basic thing that they need to survive as a community is a dependable, long-term, viable water resource?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's done. And so, speaking of that, in public utilities, one of the biggest hindrances to Portland condemning PGE is this outlying communities around here. The cities and counties outside of Portland have been some of the biggest opponents to a public utility. And I know the Cebu audience goes way beyond Portland, but if people want to see any control over their electricity and their natural gas, I think it's really important, especially for people in Washington County and Clackamas County and the various and sundry cities around, to be contacting their city council, their county commissioner, and letting them know that that's what they want, and that they want them to support Portland taking over PGE.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them that it's important for business. You know, we were mad because our rates got raised 30% about, what, 4 or 5 years ago. Well, guess what? Businesses' rates went up 50%. And, you know, when you go to your neighborhood, guys pay $100 a month for electricity. Just a little one is. And your neighborhood grocery store, the little place where you buy your cigarettes and your milk and your eggs, the convenience stores, not to mention the big ones, but the convenience stores, they're paying tons of money for this electricity. And they're the ones that can benefit. And the PGE doesn't pay the ITAX. PGE pays Multnomah County business income tax.
Right. Multnomah
County in the state that has a business income tax. And if people don't like their PUC selling us down the river, I don't know his website, but they can Google Pete. And Pete Sorensen is rather outspoken on these issues. And for Kulongowski or anyone else to pay attention, you know, there looks like there's going to be about 3 or 4 people on the Democratic side for this governor's race. Check out Pete Sorensen, and don't just check him out. Give him some money. Call him up. Ask, volunteer. Ask him what you can do to help promote his campaign. It's not just enough to vote anymore. We're not, you know, we're not getting any place with us progressives just voting. Half of us don't vote. But we have to work for people. You can go to vote for Lucinda for council, or vote for Lucinda. Try Googling those. Lucinda Tate's running for city council on the voter-owned elections. There's people out there. There are a smattering of people, some good people, working to put the people back in our government. But they need our support. They need us to have a house party and have our friends come over and listen to these candidates talk. It's not going to happen just because we think that they're a good person. You know, you and I, we got 2 votes between us. But we put 40 people we could invite to a house party. You know, if we invite 40, we'll get about 15 to 20 to show up and hear a good candidate speak.
I always vote 5 or 6 times myself.
Ah, well.
Vote early, vote often.
You must be from Chicago.
That's right. That's my motto.
Okay, well, thanks for the show, Dave.
Hey, take care, Paul. And for phoning in, this is KBOO 94.5. I'm Dave Mazza. We're talking about, you know, things are going right, things are going wrong in the city, and what we need to be dealing with next year. And I think we have another caller, so let's bring him on while we still got time. Good morning, caller.
Yes, a recommended reading. A book called, I think, Matrix, and the subtitle is An Autobiography of Water. I think it's probably the best book on the subject, but definitely everyone should read it. 65% of drinking water on the planet is located in only 10 countries.
Mm.
And remember what happened in Bolivia when Bechtel tried to buy the... In fact, the president had sold the water to Bechtel, and the people, the Bolivian people, rebelled against that action. Bechtel had to vacate the place. And since then, the quality of life for Bolivian people has improved tremendously, with a different kind of president and a different vibration going on towards furthering the community. People took charge and took action. It hurts me when I hear you and other people talking about, well, you got to call your county commissioner. First, you have to represent, demonstrate that you have power. Power is the speed of particle flow. To the degree that you can cause something to move from one place to the other in as little time as possible, you have power. And there's no other way to express true power other than that. So Bechtel tried to buy the water in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that's not being stressed enough. As far as these other outlying areas, forget them. If you have power, they'll do what you want them to do.
Well, that's kind of my view on it. I mean, you know, if they don't like it, they can drink the Willamette River, but they're in the spot they got themselves in by not looking at, you know, trying to plan long-term and all that. Yeah, then, you know, Bechtel's not the only one. I mean, Enron itself was involved in purchasing water systems in India. I think Vandana Shiva's book talks about them taking one of the most water-rich states in India, and when they got done cutting this incredible deal with the state government, and, of course, selling the water elsewhere, the people in that with little or no water, and they were paying some outrageous amount for, you know, getting this substandard water. So, you know, the corporations were doing well because they were, you know, making a big profit selling the water outside of India.
I hope someone else will bring some input in that in this next few minutes, you know, let people realize what you're fighting for here.
Yeah, and I, you know, I also agree with you that, you know, just having people call their elected officials is obviously not, I mean, that's one thing to do.
It's one thing to do, and it's the least effective thing you can
right.
do.
Right.
Sorry, well, but that just happened.
Well, no,
case.
You're talking to someone who's been, you know, spends a lot of time, for example, criticizing the peace movement for spending their time standing and just, you know, doing these vigils and not being more militant. I think we, you know, the times call for militancy. We're in desperate straits here, and we need to be showing, exercising, we need to be doing things that either exhibits the power we have, that power or preference. So, no.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks a lot.
Happy
now.
New Year.
Yeah, same to you now. And we've got another caller. Why don't we just roll right into that next caller so we don't lose time? Good morning, caller. Well, hello. Are you there?
Hello.
Good morning, caller.
Yes. I've got a question. Is it true that Berkshire Hathaway's Warren Buffett's company was rejected by a Scottish power to buy Pacific Core.
I'm sorry, is it true that what?
That Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company's bid to Scottish power to buy Pacific Core was rejected by them.
I don't know.
Okay.
Sorry.
In the energy bill, they've done away with the 1935 Public Utility Holding Act, so
right.
That makes it possible for a company like Berkshire Hathaway that's not specifically in the business of public utility business, they still can buy it. Now, I thought I heard that in the news. I just thought I would confirm with you, but
yeah, I'm sorry.
Apparently you're not aware of that either.
I hadn't heard that, but that doesn't mean anything necessarily.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for help.
All right. Take care now.
Bye.
And it's 8:51. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazin. We're Talk Radio, and let's take our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Oh, I can help on that Berkshire Hathaway.
Oh, good. I know if someone asks a question I don't have an answer, they're bound to be coming up. What's the answer?
Well, Scottish Power wants to sell PGE, but a German company was in turn going to buy Scottish Power. The German company backed away from that, and I think so what we're left with is that Buffett's company is still on track. They're the ones that are going to buy PacifiCorp. So that the Scottish Power, a complication of some other bigger company, wants to buy them.
We need a flow chart here, folks, an organizational chart, something.
So what that, how does an Oregon public utility regulate in some way, even an international power company, whether
exactly.
A shift cost back and forth, who knows? So the proceedings with the Public Utility Commission are apparently ongoing for Warren Buffett's company to buy PacifiCorp.
Well, thank you for that clarification.
I believe that's true.
Okay, well, that's more information than I had, so
okay, thank you.
I appreciate it. And let's see, we're down to about 6-7 minutes at the most. So if you want to get in your last quick call, this is the time to do it. 503-231-8187. What do you see as some of the big issues we've dealt with this year? High points, low points, or what do we need to be lining up for as 2006 approaches? What's the progressive agenda for OT6? We talked about clearly concerns about our water systems and needing to keep that in a democratic control. Public power, another big issue. Let's just get on with it and condemn the property and take it over. Folks talking a little bit like missing post office, and of course, like I said, campaign finance reform, another big one, getting the money out of politics, both here and in Salem. There's an initiative going around, and folks should be checking that out. And as one caller reminded us, we should be keeping in mind that no change can happen without the exercise of power. I think progressives are sometimes a little frightened of that idea, and that we need to be constantly looking at doing things in a way that builds power and exhibits our power. And only then will we be able to make real change. We can ask and ask and ask, and power concedes nothing, as we know, without a demand, as Frederick Douglass has told us repeatedly. And he's someone who I think had a pretty good insight on the dynamics of power and how you shift those dynamics to be in favor of democracy and people's rights. So as we head on into the end of this session here, I think that's something for everybody to be looking about and not be afraid of it. Don't back away from it. There's sometimes you talk to folks, and again, I don't want to be sounding like I'm beating up on the peace movement. Those are wonderful people doing hard work. But sometimes when you try to talk about power, they get a little shy on you It's not something you need to shy away from. It's something you need to be embracing and figuring out how to build on and be out there and be militant. And you can be a pacifist. You don't have to be passive just because you're a pacifist. Gandhi was far from passive. He was someone who was, yes, putting forward the idea of love and nonviolence, but you also had to be willing to push hard and to push those special little buttons amongst those who do hold the power, whether it means, not buying the salt that the government wants us to buy, or the cloth that the government wants us to buy, or whether it's, you know, shutting things down like World Trade Center, World Trade Organization meetings, shutting that down. There are all sorts of things out there we can be doing that are nonviolent and fit into those sort of ideals, but that are not passive. And as we enter into 2006 and things don't look like they're getting a whole lot better in terms of the war and the other various problems going on, I think it's important that we remember that, because we're not going to have too many more takes around here, too many bites out of the apple, too many chances to grab at that ring to bring these folks to a halt. We know at the national level, George Bush is just beyond reach. So we have to be looking at how do we do it locally? How do we make that rumbling start down at the bottom level that starts scaring state legislators and starts scaring people running for Congress? Because that's where we can exert our power. If we can bottle up, you know, the George Bush clone that they're going to try to foist upon us in the 2008 elections, if we can bottle them up by having control of the houses, having the houses in fear of us again, that's a big step forward. And of course, like I say, and as the gentleman earlier was saying, you know, that's only probably one of the few ways of doing it, weakest way of doing it. Getting them to respond to us as through mass action is obviously a much more important way to do that, because then you do have a move and you do have something that's exerting and building power and getting to change people's lives, and over the long term too, not just for this month. It's making them change. We've seen that a little bit from time to time here in Portland. It can happen. It happened around things like, for a while, even with the police issues. I mean, part of the constant struggle that went on around that resulted in us dropping out of the police Portland Task Force. Boy, it's been so while, I can't remember the name of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. You know, we created a political climate in which our elected leaders were able to do that and felt actually compelled to do that. And we can do that elsewhere, too, but it's hard work. It means people moving out of their comfort zones. And it means, taking some risks and maybe re-examining some of the beliefs we have, and are we really understanding what some of these folks were saying, people like Gandhi. So that's something to take into the new year. Something for us to be striving for. And if we do that, we're going to be in a lot better shape as we take on the challenges in 2006. So, wrapping up here, I think, you know, we're getting to the end of the day, and at least here for talk radio. But don't touch that dial, because as always at KBOO, you're going to have a full day of really good programming here, and who knows what's happening today. With it being the day after Christmas, there's all sorts of prizes in store. It's not the usual day, and not the usual cast of characters, so let's find out. Good day, Portland.
Wait, I get it. It's a mantra. Baby, I'm a rich man. Baby, I'm a rich man. Baby, I'm a rich man.
This guy's got everybody going round in cycles.
Before you all came along, he seemed to make so much sense. He never will them.